This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Green Tea CR Phytosome Formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's clinically proven to support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function. The secret behind Green Tea CR is its phytosome matrix, which boosts its green tea power by over 200% compared to regular green tea. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Experience the power of this trio and see how good you can feel. Call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Call now. As these move fast, dial 1-800-218-6030. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to discuss a subject that I think is of tremendous interest. You know, we've been talking a lot about CBD, cannabidiol, but cannabidiol is just part of the spectrum of the potential benefits of what's sometimes referred to as medical marijuana. We prefer the term medical cannabis because medical marijuana has the connotation of, scoring with a dealer and clandestinely smoking a joint. If you think that this phenomenon is a youth phenomenon, take a listen to this. This is an article that I culled from a business magazine. It's the Business Financial Post. Headline, "The New Gray Market. As Older Users Warm Up to Cannabis, Pot Companies Want to Learn More." And the idea is that some baby boomers, you know, maybe they've tried pot, you know, in college, they kind of grew out of it, they think it's silly, or maybe it they had adverse effects, they felt anxious or paranoid or hyper, but they may be coming back to it. It turns out that in a survey of several states, Oregon, Colorado, Washington, Nevada, and California, seniors make up 25% of the overall number of cannabis consumers. And one of the directors of research for one of these firms that's trying to move medical marijuana in the mainstream, they say, quote, "There's this category of seniors of the baby boomer demographic who used to consume cannabis in their youth, gave it a rest in their professional life, and are now getting more curious about it for medical reasons." So today we're going to talk to an expert. She's Patricia Fry. She's an MD, and she is a specialist in the prescribing and dispensing of all things related to cannabis. And it's a great pleasure having you on the program. She's written a book entitled The Medical Marijuana Guide, Cannabis and Your Health. And it's an excellent book. I recommend it very highly for anybody who wants to embark on this journey. Dr. Fry, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So first of all, how did you get involved with this? Reading the book, it sounds like it was a little serendipitous that you got into this area.
It was. I was looking for another type of job, and I had my California license and was looking for a telemedicine job, and a headhunter called me about doing medical marijuana evaluations, and I told him
it was just a gig. It was just a gig, like, you know.
Yeah,
okay, right.
Yeah. But I didn't know anything about it, and I was a little hesitant, but it worked out.
And you brought a certain element of skepticism to it because, you know, you didn't say, wow, you know, I smoke pot every day, I'm a big advocate of that. See, you've tried it, you've inhaled, as they some famous politicians have said, but you approached it more from a medical and clinical standpoint. That's one of the things I really like about your book. It's not like an unadulterated rave about using these substances. It's a very careful, scientifically resourced evaluation of, you know, how these might be helpful to people with various conditions, right?
Exactly. I never really caught on to cannabis in college or high school and never even gave it a thought. But once I was in this position where I needed to evaluate patients for it, I felt like I needed to know something about the plant. And, now 4 years later, I feel like I really do understand this plant, and it does have a place, in, medical practice. And my hope is that other physicians will learn more about the plant, become more familiar with it and more comfortable with it, and offer it as an alternative to pharmaceuticals for some of the symptoms that their patients are experiencing.
Right. So you recount that there's sort of a long history of the use of hemp-derived products and marijuana-derived products for medicinal purposes. And, you know, that kind of places these compounds within the arsenal of herbal medicine, right?
Oh, absolutely. Mankind has had a long-term relationship with this plant. It was probably the first cultivated plant, and it's been used as a medicine for about 5,000 years. It's only been illegal for about 75 years, but it's been a part of herbal medicine in many cultures for centuries.
And it's a little bit of a dark past when it comes to its prohibition, because muster evidence that the powers that be, you know, after the re-legalization of alcohol in the 30s, mm-hmm. They needed something to do, so they kind of turned on mm-hmm. pot. Plus, there was also some issues with the hemp industry that, you know, got competition from manufacturers of other synthetic plastics like DuPont and so on, mm-hmm. that maybe they wanted to suppress the hemp industry.
Absolutely. Hemp was a required crop of the 13 colonies. It's useful for making paper and rope and fiber, you know, for clothing. And around that time, they were repealing the 18th Amendment. They were legalizing alcohol. The director of this newly founded Federal Bureau of Narcotics needed something else to go after. He was married to Andrew Mellon's niece, and Andrew Mellon was the financier for the DuPonts, who were coming out with nylon and synthetic paints. And so it was kind of a little bit of a perfect storm that that cannabis kind of got caught up in, because it was a prescription medication. It had been on the U.S. pharmacopoeia for almost 100 years, and there were really no problems with it. And so because of these financial issues, where hemp would have been a competitor in that it is so economical to use, and we had this director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics who needed a new project to keep his funding going. And then at that time, if you weren't using it, was using it sort of for anxiety and what we would call recreational. It was it was used a lot by the Mexican soldiers because they preferred it to alcohol, because it could help them relax and they could kind of get a good night's sleep and they didn't have a hangover the next day. So the population that was really using it was an easy target as well.
So there's a certain, shall we say, racist element to that too, because, you know, I recall when I was a high school student, I'm a baby boomer, they showed us a film called Reefer Madness. And, you know, they were saying that this was something that was used by the underclass, by blacks, by Mexicans, by crazy eccentric jazz musicians, and it basically made him crazy. You know, it was like, and it made him addicted too. We'll talk a little bit about the issue of dependency, because I think that's important. But, you know, something that I think is important to get out in front of is, you know, this whole issue of legalizing medical marijuana. It's a big issue. It's a cause celeb. A lot of states have done it, but does legalization of medical cannabis open the door to wide stream availability? Is it in effect condoning it? So, for example, you know, we have, you know, oxycodone is legal, you know, for prescribing purposes, that there are medical applications for pain, but merely by making it available, well, there's a big subculture that's been an embrace of this very addictive medication. And similarly, you know, morphine's great for pain. But the fact that morphine got invented led to recreational use of heroin, and we're off to the races with a deadly heroin epidemic. So, you know, how do we address that concern?
Well, it is a concern. There is cannabis has an addiction rate of about 9%, and it's most commonly an issue in young males 18 to 26 that are using it recreationally. And with like any substance that gives any type of intoxicating effect or euphoric effect, there's a risk that some people will misuse it or abuse it. And that's a concern, especially in adolescents, because their brains are still developing. But with adults, whether they use it medicinally or whether they use it because they're going to misuse or abuse something, at least the cannabis will not kill them. You know, if you overdose on opioids, you stop breathing.
You get respiratory arrest, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you overdose on cocaine, you can, you know, your heart can go into an arrhythmia. If you overdose on Tylenol, your liver can shut down. If you overdose on cannabis, you'll be sick and nauseous and maybe paranoid, but you will live through the experience. And though not to use that much again, it's impossible to take a dose that's so high that it would be lethal. And so you're going to always have a population of people who are going to overdo something. And quite honestly, I've used cannabis so often to help patients come off of opioids or even to come off of methadone or crack. I don't worry about them overdoing it, because if they do, at least they'll live through it. And perhaps, you know, with time, they'll kind of outgrow this, you know. So I don't worry too much about that, except with adolescents. You know, the adults, I'm not too concerned.
Obviously, so we really don't, in talking about this, we really don't want to condone the use of this for, you know, junior high school students, because there are some studies that suggest that there are some neurodevelopmental consequences. Some studies have suggested it heightens the rate of schizophrenia, but other studies suggest that these are people who were destined to become schizophrenic anyway. The pot didn't cause it. It just sort of uncovered their susceptibility.
Actually, and I just would like to interject that THC and CBD have antipsychotic benefits. And so the thought is that some patients who are in the early stages of psychosis and may not have been identified are actually self-medicating and getting some relief from using the cannabinoids.
From the very troubling symptoms that they have. It sort of has a calmative effect. Okay. Well, so, you know, key question here is, can you get relief from various conditions? Is it efficacious at doses or in forms that minimize the high? Because I think that's, you know, frankly, you know, we spent a lot of our early lives trying to get whatever, stoned, drunk, you know, get out of our heads. I think we, as, you know, responsible adults, as we age, we want to maintain mental focus. Many of us have, you know, have a lot of responsibilities. We're already worried about losing our memory. So we want the benefits, but we don't want, we not necessarily desirous of the high.
Well, the plant has about 500 compounds. 150 of them are particular to the cannabis plant. Of those compounds, there are only one or two that have any type of intoxicating effect. The most well-known, of course, is THC. There's a metabolite of THC that is mildly intoxicating, but it's also very sedating, so it's great for sleep. When you use CBD and THC together, they actually potentiate each other in terms of their medicinal benefits, but the CBD will mitigate the intoxicating effect of the THC, which makes it beneficial for patients who need the THC but who do not want to experience any mental impairment.
So the CBD has been advertised as something that has the benefits without the high. I mean, maybe you feel a little more mellow, there's some relief of anxiety, but you don't feel like you can't get behind the wheel of a car and you know, drive through the night. It's not going to make you steer off the road or you know, lose your judgment.
No, there's no intoxicating effect with CBD. So people can use CBD or CBD with a small amount of THC and be completely clear-minded. They can work, they can drive, they can sign contracts, they're completely in control. It's only when THC is used by itself that it's intoxicating.
Okay. So in your book, a continuing theme is different strokes for different folks and different conditions. It's highly individualized. And also the theme that less is more, that, you know, you don't need to get completely blasted, you know, to get relief from pain, or to get, some of the benefits in terms of digestion, the med, sleep, and so on.
Right. You don't have to be high or stoned at all. Now a little bit of intoxication can be a benefit for some patients. You know, one person's adverse effect is another, can be another person's benefit. For patients who are, have suffered continuous chronic severe pain, patients going through serious illnesses, severe depression, sometimes just being a little bit, intoxicated or, relaxed can actually offer a respite for these patients, where it takes their mind off of their pain. It takes their mind off of their situation. And so it can be a benefit, and it's certainly a small amount of THC can go a long way. In terms of treating symptoms like pain, actually THC works better at low to moderate doses than it does at high doses. So when you get into really high doses, you're actually losing a little bit of the pain-relieving benefit. When patients or people are looking for really high doses of THC, they probably have more of an issue with tolerance than an actual medical condition.
When you say tolerance, did it require more and more?
Yeah, because we have this endocannabinoid system. It's a receptor system. We make our own compounds in the body to interact or to activate these receptors, and THC activates them as well. And when the system sees too much THC around, it starts to shut down receptors, because the whole system is there to create balance or homeostasis. So when it sees a lot of THC, it says, well, we don't need so many receptors. So it starts to shut down some of the receptors. And so people who are using high doses of THC will find that they need more and more to get the same euphoric effect. But it is, if it is a patient who is using high doses for, let's say, if they're treating cancer or some other, you know, symptom, and they need to, and they find that their dose isn't working any longer, all they need to do is stop using it for about 3 or 4 days, and then these receptors are released.
That's sort of like a reboot of their receptors. Yeah, interesting.
Exactly.
So I think a big question for a lot of our listeners, many of our listeners are attuned to the benefits of CBD. CBD is now more widely available. It can be ordered online, or it's found in, you know, many health food stores. I've seen it more and more in sort of these boutique-y stores in New York City. Certain parts of the country less so, but, you know, I think it's more of a free fire zone here in New York. What about the difference between people who respond to CBD alone and the people who may require a THC-CBD combo?
Yes, CBD actually has more medical benefits than THC, and many patients do very well with CBD. CBD and THC together, though, seem to work a little bit better, and CBD doesn't really interact with the receptor directly. THC does. CBD is thought to interfere with the metabolism of the cannabinoids that our bodies make, sort of like a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, so that CBD inhibits the enzyme that breaks down anandamide, which is one of the cannabinoids that our bodies make. And so by doing that, it increases our natural endocannabinoid levels. But the THC interacts directly with the receptor, and most importantly, it interacts directly with the neuron, with the pain neuron, so that once that signal is activated, the signal, it can be turned off by THC. CBD doesn't do that directly. CBD does that indirectly by increasing anandamide, which will turn the signal off. THC can turn the signal off. And there are quite a number of pain syndromes that are thought to be due to endocannabinoid deficiency. Mm-hmm. So by adding these cannabinoids, you're kind of boosting your endocannabinoid system to work more efficiently.
What's interesting, and when you contrast THC versus CBD, you know, a lot of people talk about the munchies when they smoke pot. You know, it's kind of mm-hmm. sort of like a famous trope from a Cheech and Chong movie. You know, they just mm-hmm. hit the drive-in and chow down. But mm-hmm. CBD, you note in the book, has opposite effects, and I've noticed several of my patients have told me that they are less impulsive about craving sugar and carbohydrates yes. when they take CBD alone, as opposed to getting the munchies.
It's a number of mechanisms. One, CBD suppresses appetite. It also regulates glucose and fat metabolism. And so I commonly see patients back who have lost weight. They're using CBD. They've lost weight. Their insulin levels their doses are down. Their blood sugars are coming down. Their hemoglobin A1Cs are improving. It really is about modulation and getting things back in balance. Even patients who typically use THC and do have appetite stimulation, they tend to have lower body fat percentages than people who do not use cannabis. Hmm. And it's because it influences all of these other mechanisms. So they are utilizing these calories perhaps more efficiently.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. But in part two, I want to get into some specific applications. So we're going to talk about pain. We're going to talk about stress and anxiety. We'll talk even about cancer, Alzheimer's disease, and digestive ailments. There's a lot of applications to a variety of conditions, even more than I've just enumerated. We'll take that up in part two with today's guest. She is Patricia Fry, MD, written a great book, The Medical Marijuana Guide, Cannabis and Your Health. I recommend it very highly. Oops, that's a double entendre. You tend to do that sometimes when you talk about this kind of stuff. Go out and score it. There we go again. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back.